inviting you to join us in celebration of Kwanzaa Umoja, the first night of Kwanzaa, the 26th of December, the Third Ward Multi-Service Center, that's Ferry 611 Ennis. We're inviting you to join us at KPFT broadcasting live, the 12th annual KPFT Kwanzaa radio broadcast. That's Wednesday, again, December 26th, 2012. From 6 p.m. until 8 p.m., the broadcast will take place, but the celebration will last until 11 o'clock p.m. that night. Fellowship with us. Join us again, Wednesday, December 26th. That's the night of Umoja, Kwanzaa.
You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
And welcome to the post-apocalyptic edition of Technology Bites on the station you're listening to.
We're living on borrowed time. This is all bonus time. Technically, we should be non-existent.
It's true.
It's also the very last show.
It's the second last show this year that we've had. This was the last one before the end of the year.
Yep.
The one last week was the last one before the end of time. Or was it last week? Or
so, it's, yeah. So it's actually both our first and last show. It's our first show post-apocalypse and our PA, last show of the
last
year.
Last show 2012.
Could be the last lucky show for a year, too. Is 2013 unlucky or is just the year 13 lucky? Are we missing this by 2,000 years?
It's 2,000 times unlucky.
Wow.
Or something. Welcome to Technology.
The world ends on 13, 13, 13. Something like that.
Oh, no.
Yeah, well, by the time we get to 12, 13, 13, we'll need a 13th month to deal with it. Welcome to Technology Bites. We're making sense. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Justin.
Oh, no.
He is, though.
It's true. No. Now, he's Groovehouse. You were going to get introduced later, but...
Sorry.
No, it's okay. You blew it. Get out of here.
Man. See you later, Justin. It was fun.
And he's...
Who is that guy in
that's
there?
That's Justin.
Who's Justin?
Justin's some vagabond geek we met, you know, along the way.
Drifter, grifter.
Green shoe.
Green shoe.
Houston Wireless, Cava Canes. He goes way back.
This is like going way back, yeah.
Yeah.
Old obscure hardware.
It's really good to be here. It's neat to see you guys.
He loves us. He's in town. You live in Austin, right?
I do.
Sort of. As much as you can live in a place like that.
True.
So his knowledge of old obscure hardware
kind of
is replacing Dwight, who is old obscure hardware.
Yes.
Dwight lived through it, though. That's the difference. Although Justin's properly studied.
What? Justin didn't survive? Is this the ghost of Justin?
I am dead tech. Yeah.
Dead tech. All right. So yeah, Justin reached out and wanted to hang out after the show, and there's no after the show for me, so he has to hang out during the show. He's occupying the space that would otherwise be occupied by Dwight Silverman, who's in San Antonio. So Pete, look out your window. Do you see him?
Knocking on the door when
you
get in.
No, there's been some lurking, but I haven't seen Dwight.
I told him he should go over to your house and Skype it in.
Or bark.
He tweeted his picture from Mercado, which is downtown.
I figure if he went, you know, he could have missed the show by going to your house and Skyping. The way you missed the show.
He would just miss every other second of the show.
No, I think he would hear it okay. He just would cut out if he tried to say anything.
All right, well, we're really glad to have survived the apocalypse and be able to be here. And survive Christmas.
Did y'all have any disasters? I mean, like, maybe apocalypse on, like, a very localized level.
Did you say apocalypse on, like, I'm sorry.
Apocalypse.
So it was
a new holiday.
Hey, we just invented a new genre.
Apocalyte. It was... All right, so, yeah, we survived that, and as a result, that means I had to quickly whip up a flyer for the next Geek Gathering. I was kind of hoping to get off, you know, get a break, but no, we survived, and so there's a Geek Gathering a week from,
I guess, Friday, from
tomorrow.
Right?
Tomorrow. Yeah. From Friday, yeah, a week from Friday. But I almost didn't come in. I had Monday and Tuesday off because of Christmas, and I was like, I was driving home, wonder what's on TV. Oh, crap. I better remember. And then this car drove by with a bunch of KPFT stickers. I went, a sign from God. I need to remember to go to the radio station tonight. I think I work there. All right, so yeah, Technology Bites, we're glad to be here. Visit us online at geekradio.com. You can also visit kpft.org and check out the stream. I think we have a link to the stream. I haven't checked it in a while to see if I've got the current streaming link on Geek Radio. But if not, you can go to kpft.org and stream it from there. We hang out on IRC, irc.cuckoo.com, in the channel Tech Bites. And that's the show within a show. You just never can tell what might be going on inside of the IRC chat room. So go check that out if you dare. And that's all I got. So,
ooh, I got another good apocalypse thing.
Another good one.
It's
good
too bad
apocalypse.
It's too bad I'm thinking about all these too late. I'm sure another one will come around. But
there'll be another end of the world before you
see.
Know
that's
it.
The thing. They needed to have a big karaoke party and call it apocalypsing.
Oh, or get the. Get the lips off of that thing that's related to a llama, the alpocalypse.
Oh.
It is the end of the world after all.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it is the last show of the year. Aren't you glad? And, yep, there's the IRC. I'm hanging out there now.
Oh, yeah.
Groovehouse, I got there just in time to catch Groovehouse grunting. When did you start playing on IRC, Groovehouse?
I was there last week, and I'm back this week because it's the show within a show, and some, you know, it's pretty funny in there sometimes.
I have to say that, you know, I'm very disappointed. When I was in Salzburg for Advent, you know, hunting Krampus, I couldn't find anything Krampus to buy. There were no T-shirts, no Krampus figures, no do-it-yourself Krampus costume kits, you know, nothing.
Krampus shrinky dinks.
Nothing. I mean, there was a marzipan Krampus cookie that would not have made it in my luggage to come home.
Marzipan.
But not, I mean, you would think that somebody would have thought to capitalize. And so I come back to Houston, and I go to the Continental Club, and I go to Sig's Lagoon over there, run by Thomas, and I go in, and he's got Krampus wrapping paper, Krampus cards. He's got a Krampus. I bought a Krampus stocking.
Excellent.
You didn't even have to go all the way over there. You totally wasted all that time on the plane and all that money on the hotel.
I was ripped off. Here I am looking at the real Krampus like a sucker.
You travel all over the world, and Krampus was at home all the time.
That's right. Just, you know, you knew where Krampus was all the whole time. Clip your heels together and run for your life.
I can't run fast in heels.
That's all right. You don't have to run faster than a Krampus. You just have to run faster than the people you're running away with. All right. So, we're glad to be here. We're glad you're here. We're going to now go to San Antonio via Skype and do the Technology Bites Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Okay, well, now that you've passed the apocalypse successfully, you need something else to worry about, right? Well, here it is. What's the next great target for hackers and digital troublemakers for 2013? Healthcare records. According to a long report in the Washington Post, based in part on research by the Information Security Institute at Johns Hopkins University, the many ways that healthcare professionals access health information about their patients are riddled with holes. Hooray. Here's a good one. In one case documented by the Post, residents at the University of Chicago Medical Center used a shared folder on Dropbox that allowed them to access patient records on their iPads. Oops. Yeah, that's scary. And another, OpenEMR, an open-source medical record system that had been adopted agency-wide by the Peace Corps, was found to have numerous flaws that opened it to attacks by hackers. Many of the weaknesses found were described as being pretty basic, or as one source quoted in the story put it, security 101. Oops. Oh, but open source software. You know, that's, I guess some of the time, if you're talking about something that's not used over and over again by lots of people, then open source, you may want to get somebody good to check it over for you. Part of the problem is that the last government guidelines on this issue were published in 2005, and thus are not up to speed with what are now considered everyday practices. More troubling than the vulnerabilities, which expose only the potential for an attack, are the anecdotal bits of evidence that attacks are actually taking place. At the Department of Veterans Affairs, there were nearly 2 instances of medical devices infected with malware between 2009 and 2011. In another case, a server in Utah on Medicaid data on nearly 800,000 people was attacked earlier in the year. The attack was traced to a server in Eastern Europe, though, of course, as is always the case with this, it's impossible to know where the attacker really was coming from. And this one's more of a kind of interesting progress thing. And it's not like a massive surprise, but apparently over half of Americans don't have or use a landline, according to data published late last week by the Centers for Disease Control. The study tracks the demographics of landline telephone use and was designed to help the CDC adapt its data collection programs, which relied heavily on calling landlines. So in other words, their stuff was skew really old because generally old people would be the ones who would still have a landline and would actually use it. The survey found that more than one-third of American homes had only wireless telephones during the first half of 2012, while 15.9% of all households had both wireless, you know, cell phones and landlines, but received all or almost all calls on the wireless phones. That means that 51.7% of U.S. homes didn't use their landlines in the first half of this year. That's a 1.8% increase from the same period a year ago. So, some other just picky numbers, young people, 6 in 10 adults aged 25 to 29 lived in households with only wireless, with only cell phones. That number drops, of course, as household members get older. Renters generally just use cell phones. That makes sense, too. Poor people use wireless. Landline owners are more likely to health insurance, though, than those in wireless-only homes. Men are more likely than women to live in wireless-only homes. And let's see, as the FCC begins its regulatory process to change the rules associated with landline access, and telcos like AT&T and Verizon try to get out of the landline business altogether, it's clear that the phasing out of copper-based voice lines will have repercussions that go beyond telephone calls. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens as that goes forward. But obviously, that's a massive change. That's that you can. It's going kind of in slow motion. You can see it happening, and it's a big change from when just about everybody had wired phones. Some more scare stuff. Why not? I guess is while you're bemoaning the death of the landline and the hacking of your medical records, cyber extortionists stealing ransomware have upped the ante by pushing users' panic buttons with claims that their malware will wipe hard drives, the security firm said Monday, which was Christmas Eve. Why would you? The claim is bogus, said Symantec, and is simply a ploy by scammers preying on people's fears. Ransomware is a long-standing label for malware that basically, once it gets on your computer, it cripples the machine or encrypts the files and displays essentially a ransom note that demands payment to give back control of the machine to the owner. The technique, flatly called an extortion racket by Symantec last month, has been in use for at least 6 years. Until relatively recently, it was rare and ineffective and mostly seen in Eastern Europe. The new one, Symantec identified as Trojan.RansomLock.G, that is called Reviton by other antivirus vendors, claims that any move to circumvent the lockdown will trigger disaster. Quote, an attempt to unlock the computer by yourself will lead to the full formatting of the operating system. All the files, videos, photos, documents on your computer will be deleted, the on-screen message reads. That's not true. The Symantec analysts an analysis found no disk wiping capability in the malware's code. More importantly, they were able to remove it and unlock the machine without any formatting taking place or files deleted. So, if you have this come along, then look at getting antivirus software to remove it and you can save a lot of money relative to you know, paying off the extortionists. The other thing, Symantec credited a blogger nicknamed Caffeine for reporting the purported wiping skills of the ransomware. And he tipped the hat to Trend Micro for the variant on December 10th. Ransom Law poses a message from law enforcement and adapts to its victims' locations. For example, U.S. users see a message supposedly from the Department of Justice's FBI, while German users see one allegedly from the Bundesamt für Polizei, the German federal police. It claims that the user has violated one or more laws. The FBI one lists child pornography, copyright, and software licensing laws, and alleges that the victim has been monitored viewing child pornography. In November, Symantec released a report describing the rapid expansion of ransomware into Western markets from Eastern Europe, and that the millions of dollars that criminals reap from the scams don't pay the ransom. It says, remove the malware. Symantec provides a free tool, Norton Power Eraser, that seeks out and destroys ransomware and other forms of scareware like fake antivirus software, so you can go to their site. So if you get some kind of ransomware, you're better off. At this point, as far as I've seen on any of them, you're better off fixing, you know, getting an antivirus and getting rid of the problem. Then you're way better off on that than you are trying to deal with the person with the criminal to put it on there. In other news, this one's interesting because how many times has Google, you know, been talking about some kind of new phone that they're going to put out that was designed to, you know, dethrone Apple or whoever, you know, the next various Nexus phones have always been a big deal. But now, apparently, there's a new phone that they're working on through Motorola. Google acquired Motorola for $12.5 billion. Motorola now designing a marquee handset with cutting edge features to stand apart from existing phones when it's released next year. While Google's known for swift execution on the web, its new hardware unit has run into hurdles associated with manufacturing supply chain management that have caused the company to rethink some initial plans for it. They're calling it the X Phone, such as using a bendable screen. So they started out looking pretty, you know, going pretty wild, and it's getting a little more normal, apparently. Motorola is supposed to be working on two fronts, devices that will be sold by carrier partners, like Verizon Wireless, like the Droid smartphones, and the X Phone. Motorola is also expected to work on an X tablet after the phone. So, meanwhile, Google has to manage relationships with smartphone makers that use its Android mobile device software, particularly Samsung, who's Motorola's big rival. Let's see, Dennis Woodside, a former Google top sales executive who's now Motorola's chief exec, wouldn't talk about products under development, but he did say that they're, quote, investing in a team and a technology that will do something quite different than the current approaches. For the X Phone, which is being led by former Google product manager Lior Ron, who worked on the Google Maps team, Motorola wanted top-notch features for the phones, camera and photo software, like better color saturation, and the ability to take panoramic shots. You know, welcome to the last episode of, or last release for iPhone. But some of the features were found to drain battery life or already have been incorporated into popular new devices like the iPhone 5. Just ran into difficulties, like I said before, using a bendable screen, using ceramics to make the X Phone more stretch resistant, use more colors and mold into different shapes. So it'll be interesting to see what they're doing, and we'll look for kind of rumors as far as what this X Phone is going to be. Clearly, they start with kind of a blank page to try and see what how fancy they could get, but it sounds like they've not been able to come up with yet the revolutionary stuff, or at least it hasn't leaked that you get on like the iPhone or some of the Samsungs and that. We'll see. Another good news from Google. Google's voice over IP service in Gmail, you know, phone calls from Gmail, you know, will remain free of charge for calls in Canada for 2013. So this will be the third year of free Google voice service for U.S. and Canadian customers right through the standard Gmail interface. So you can keep doing that if you've been using it. If you haven't been using it, well, now you know about it. If you're one of those poor fools with a landline and they're paying long distance, you may want to try the free Google Voice software and see if that works out better for you. And finally, this one, it's kind of there's not a, you know, Macworld is coming up relatively soon, but not that soon, and there's not a lot of stuff that's been out there for rumoring, but this week, all weeks, there's rumors about a next generation iPad, fifth generation iPad, full size, and the iPad Mini getting the Retina display. It's the strangest time for that kind of rumor to happen, because it's kind of dead on all the news stuff. Per the Japanese blog Mac Atakara, reportedly preparing a thinner, lighter, fifth-generation iPod model for a March unveiling, which is only 5 months after the most recent version was released in October. Citing sources familiar with the matter, the website claims that the 9.7-inch tablet will surface in March, and that essentially it's going to pull the iPad look to be more in line with the iPad. They didn't give the exact dimensions, but they said it should be thinner and lighter than the current one. With the third and fourth generation iPad, the chassis was actually slightly thicker than its predecessor, as more internal space was required to hold the circuits that power the unit's Retina display. So it's hard to see how they could figure out how to shrink it substantially in 5 months since they put out the last one. Let's see, the rumor fits with recent whispers that Apple may be moving to an aggressive half-year product refresh cycle, like you saw with the fourth-generation iPad. The company's consistently worked with a year-long rotation for iDevice lines since they came out. Of course, that only happens until it stops happening, and it already has stopped. So let's see. The other thing they said is that, and this rumor's been around and is not a massive surprise, other than figuring out when's it happened. They did say that an upgraded iPad Mini is already in the works. The smaller tablet would reportedly fit an all-new 7.9-inch Retina display, or fit that in into it over things from the current full-size iPad, the A6X processor, for example. Separate reports have echoed the second-gen iPad Mini rumors, though a prospective launch date timeline has not been established. So there's already those rumors happening, and it'll be interesting to see where that goes. And fortunately, the planet at least will live to see it, because we dodged the apocalypse. And that's the news.
All right. Yay.
So, yeah, you wonder, did they, the rumors, is that just, was, you wonder, is that an Apple competitor who, like, helped push the rumors so that people who got, like, iPad minis for Christmas would feel like they were going to get shafted in 3 months?
Every time I buy Apple, I feel like I'm getting shafted.
Yeah, that's the Apple experience, I thought. That's how it works.
You pay for that.
Well, you could, although you could turn it the other way. The, like, annual cycle for releasing new stuff made it seem to a lot of people like Apple wanted you to buy a new one every year, where if they're doing this more frequent releases, I don't think that anybody would argue that that means Apple thinks that people should buy a brand new iPad every 6 months.
Yes, it does.
I don't think so. I think they know that there's a group of people with fat wallets who, to have the latest thing, would pay it. You know, the early adopter tax, I guess they're raising that. But I would think it more inclines people to just kind of wait until they need a new one.
But you know that there's a group of people that hate Apple no matter what. So that's what they're going to say, even if it doesn't really make sense.
So.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's certainly the perception, I mean, from the Apple detractors that is a design by Apple to do that. But I'd easily contend, or, you know, counter that with the idea that technology is evolving so fast that it's not unusual for a new thing to come out pretty quickly, especially in the mobile, in the handheld market. I think in some ways Apple has gotten a hand, you know, I know that when I bought my MacBook Pro or I bought my iMac, I don't feel like I have to upgrade that every time the new iMac or the MacBook Pro gets updated. I don't feel like I need to update that. But I think the handheld stuff, the portable stuff, is not just a utilitarian object or something that people use, but it's also a status symbol. You know, when you flash it, I mean, if the iPhone 5 wasn't significantly thinner than the iPhone 4, if they made the iPhone 5 look like an iPhone 4, then people wouldn't care.
No, yeah.
Yeah, right. There'd be no way of telling. You know, it's like with a MacBook Pro. You can't really tell, oh, that MacBook Pro is 2 years older than mine. You just don't know.
But the 3G and the 3GS and the 4 and the 4S
certain extent. But they could kind of adopt the form factor. I mean, how light does your phone have to be? They could have used that extra space in the iPhone 5 for more battery life.
No, it was most of that was the second piece of glass.
Was it?
They got rid of. Yeah, a lot of that thickness.
Well, when you get your fruit roll-up version of the iPhone, the one that just kind of rolls up and goes inside of a pencil holder or something, people are going
to
know.
I think it's supposed to be a little scroll, like a little Roman scroll that pulls out.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
I think it should be a thing where, you know, you just hold up two fingers and it shows up between the two of them. Because of an implant.
Peter mentioned the X phone, but and I forget the name of it, there's a Russian phone developer that's supposed to release an Android phone next year that has the standard, you know, screen up front, but on the back, it's OLED, like e-ink, to where it'll just, like, you know, always be, like, maybe your most current emails or whatever. You can set up an app for that, so you can actually face it down and just see at a glance what's going on. I don't know if that's just going to be a fad or if that could actually be kind of cool. Yeah, two-sided phone.
So you could have no problem. So if you forget to turn that off, people looking at the back of your phone or reading your
email.
Your oh, look. What a lame Facebook update.
That email's not supposed to be seen by anybody.
You have your Amazon Fire tablet on one side and your paper white on the back.
Yeah.
That could...
They could just glue a Nook to a Kindle back to back. All right, phone number here is 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT if you want to be on the air. Last week was a little odd. I think we didn't have all that many phone calls coming in. I don't know if that was because of the holiday or because we just everybody turned off the radio after they heard the song. Something happened. I don't know. But this week, I'm watching Justin over there as he goes through his stuff. He had to leave and come back with stuff. Ah. Look out. Be careful. He's hungry. Low blood sugar. All right. I see we do have a call in the queue, which yes, is a good sign. But again, the phone number is 713-526-5738 or 713-526-KPFT if you want to be on the air with us tonight. All right, Groove House.
Yes.
Who are you going to offer up to us?
All right, first up on the show, we're going to speak with George.
George, you're on the air.
Hi. Excuse me. I have two questions for you. The second question, I guess I'll take my answer off the air because it may require some discussion. In fact, I was talking to the call screener about that. It's kind of an interesting question. But my main thing is, how do you take a folder, not a file, but a folder, the entire contents of an entire folder, and share it over the Internet with somebody else in a different city? I mean, you can't do that with, like, email attachments. You can't attach an entire folder. Or, like, you send it, you can't attach an entire folder. Just the content of the folder you can do, but not the entire folder. How do you do something like that with an entire folder? You
know? The easiest way is zip it up and attach it to the email and send it to somebody.
Well, I guess it would really depend on how much data is in that folder.
Yeah, it wouldn't really be that much content in the folder, but we found out that you can't email attach folders to the email like that.
Well, no, of course not. You cannot do that because you can attach files to an email, but as Pete said, you can take the contents of the folder and zip it into a single file and send that if it's not too large.
So you could have folders inside folders and send that whole structure to somebody, and it doesn't matter what computer operating system they have. When they unzip it, they should end up with the same directory structure.
The other option is to use an online service like Dropbox or something like that, where you can put the folders into a share location you can share with others, and you can create your file structure and all that, and then you can share that via email give somebody permissions on that folder and they can get to it.
Zipping, you say, is the answer, though. I've never thought about that. Okay. We'll try. I'll have to try that and see what happens. And all right, never thought about that. And the big other question is, not the big question, but the second question is, and I'll tell you my answer this off the air. What is the difference between a geek and a nerd?
All right, we'll take that off the air. If you you go to Google and search geek nerd diagram. And
the Venn diagram. That's the better way to go, because otherwise you're just going to get into a week-long debate with, you know.
But the thing is, these definitions only happened since, you know, the .com happened and kind of like nerd or geek culture, whatever, like tech culture kind of started permeating society. Because before that, to me, there wasn't fixed definitions. I mean, they both sort of meant the same thing. They were both kind of negative terms that were used for people to me. I mean, from where I, my knowledge, my background, but
I like to think that this show, though, took geek back and made it. We have said since the beginning, you know, we speak geek. I think the difference, from my point of view, the difference is a geek is somebody who's deeply into something. They really know the ins and outs. They really understand it. They're a big enthusiast for it. And they can explain it and show it to other people. They have there's some social skills. They're not necessarily great social skills, but there are social skills there. They can present that information to somebody else. A nerd has no social skills, so they may know everything there is to know about some particular subject, but they have no real way of sharing it with anybody who's not.
Well, according to the diagram,
that's kind of my understanding. The definition has developed to be, you can be a car geek or a football geek or whatever. It's just if you have like an intense interest and knowledge in some particular area.
I think it's depth of knowledge too. It's knowing the minutiae, you know.
And generally is there isn't a lack of social skills necessarily. Whereas with nerd, it tends to imply specifically like math and science, deep knowledge, and a lack of social skills.
Well, I think, is it the lack of social skills that makes you a nerd, or is it being a nerd that causes you to have a lack of social skills?
One doesn't help the other, but I think you're kind of, I think it's more of a genetics thing. I think people are predisposed to that.
One does not simply become a geek.
Well, you know, I've liked the term geek and have preferred that, but, you know, geek has its origins in, you know, pre-computer life. And you can be a geek for just about anything. You know. But I thought the diagram actually was pretty useful. I kind of like the diagram that I found that has three circles, the Venn diagram, one being intelligence, one being social ineptitude, and one being obsession. And where all three of those combine, they make a nerd. But if you have social ineptitude and intelligence, and that's it, it's a dweeb. You know, I'm forgetting dweebs here. Our obsession and social ineptitude just makes you a dork. But if you Google search that that diagram, I think it comes close. I mean, some people, again, some people would change geek for nerd or nerd for geek or make those two pretty much interchangeable. And I think for the most part in today's culture, they're pretty much interchangeable.
I think even the more simplified, if you want to, you know, take a circle out of the Venn diagram and go with two circles, there's one that's floating out there. One circle is geeks, one circle is nerds, and the intersection is people with strong opinions on the distinction between geeks and nerds.
Yeah, but I
description of the diagram, it sounds to me like it was a diagram geek that came up with it.
Yes.
There definitely are people who don't feel that the term geek and nerd are the same, and that they're offended by one or the other.
Well, there was a recent couple of outbreaks of hostility in the geek nerd community, where somebody who was a comic book artist, and I don't remember his name, and I don't know how big of a comic book artist he was, but he lashed out at these girls that are showing up at cons and stuff that are just dressing in skimpy outfits and claiming to be a geek or a nerd, but really have no basis in the culture as he saw it. And somebody else, some guy who was actually reporting for one of the online gaming magazine sites or review sites, kind of went into that same thing where he was talking about how these people don't really belong to our culture and they're kind of coming in and exploiting or taking advantage. And both of them got some pretty severe blowback on those comments.
Yeah, we've worked really, really hard to get girls without a lot of clothes to show up at all of our events.
I was going to say that at the very least, the people that are if they're being exploited have been longing for this level of exploitation for a long time.
A huge amount of social engineering has gone into this, so let's not mess it up, folks. Let's ride this out.
Most of the complaints actually came from nerds.
Well, it has been interesting, you know, to witness how people, you know, want to be a geek or want to be a nerd. Now, it used to be that was not a thing that people strove for. It was
a bullying name when I was going to high school and junior high.
Yeah. I mean, the same people that used to beat me up in high school now bought an iPhone and call themselves a geek.
And wear shirts that say, like, you know, I heart nerds. And,
yeah.
You
didn't heart.
You hit nerds. That's wrong.
It starts with an H, but it's not heart. That's the shirt to make. I hit nerds. I fist nerds.
Hey-o.
Oh. Way to go.
I'm not so sure.
Next time.
I'm glad I didn't go to high school with you.
I just like to drive by, and when I see people that look nerdy, I like to whoever I'm with, I like to go, look, there's a nerd. Nerd! And then they say, why aren't you doing that? Of all people,
irony.
I'm a jock. As a jock, it's my job to hate nerds, which is a Simpson reference, which kind of shows that which side I'm actually on.
it's ironical.
We do need to take. We should take nerd back and geek back from the people that have taken geek. Maybe, like, is there a way to up that to make it unfavorable.
This isn't nerd radio.
No.
No.
Nerd. We need to take prom queen and jock back.
Oh, that's, I just wanted to declare myself a prom queen. That's awesome. I vote daily. Yeah. We're prom queens. Where's my tiara?
Barrett and I will be having a spotlight dance at the next geek gathering. I mean, jock gathering.
Your letter jacket ready?
Yeah, my letter jacket would just be a big G. That would be the thing, is to sell nerd gear that looked like sports paraphernalia. You know, like a letter jacket with a G on it. Something like that.
Like a jock wrist protector strap?
a jock pocket protector strap. Or something. All right, 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air with us tonight. And if you do have an opinion on what's a geek or what's a nerd, and which side of that do you define yourself as? I think I call myself a nerd or a geek, depending on who I'm talking to.
Maxim Dweeby.
We're also taking applications for fake geek girls to come and parade around in skimpy clothes on the geek gathering.
Exploit me. Exploit me, yes. Come to the geek gathering and take advantage. Speaking of geeks and nerds, I ran into Lupilo at the grocery store.
Just was he on the toy aisle?
See, he's like a Star Wars
geek. Careful, yeah. I was always thinking which one to use there. I think he wouldn't be offended, though.
I don't know. He'll be calling in here in a few minutes to tell us.
We're not geeks or nerds. We're Jedi.
Hold on. Maybe like, this is not the show you're listening to. Jay Lee mind trick.
That's my salacious crumb.
Oh, speaking of that laugh, there's a new Wizard of Oz movie coming out. I saw the preview at the Der Hobbit movie.
Of like
the
trilogy? Hobbit.
Huh?
Of like the trilogy, the books?
It's
or it's a remake.
No, it's an remake, no, it's not a remake. It's an origin story of the wizard and how he got to Oz. And I don't know if that's from the original books.
Was one of the books that?
I don't know. I never read all the books. I don't know. But it borrows from the idea from the original movie of starting out in black and white and going to color, but it's in 3D and it looks fantastic.
I thought the trailer looked good. Did you see it in 3D?
I did. I saw the 3D trailer for Star Trek.
I haven't seen that.
That was unbelievable. That's going to be
awesome. So are they recycling the new cast and crew, like the alternate universe Star Trek?
Yeah, they're recycling that. And the 3D preview at the IMAX for that is...
All I want to know is if you can sync up Dark Side of the Moon with this new Wizard of Oz.
We can try.
We're doing the same thing.
And what else? I saw the preview for...
what were you at that you were seeing previews?
Der Hobbit.
I was at Der Hobbit. When I was in Germany, I kept seeing posters for the Hobbit movie, and it was all, Der Hobbit, Der Hobbit. And on the posters in Germany, they had the release for the movie and the DVD release. On the same poster for when they already know when it's coming out on DVD.
Yeah, when I was in Russia, I went and watched Prometheus.
Prometheus.
Prometheus. Yeah. I thought it was going to be subtitled in Russian, but it was dubbed, so I really didn't understand.
Spoiler alert! I finally watched Prometheus. It's Alien.
Well, it's by the same director. It's got pieces of it in it.
Yeah,
it's an origin story.
It's an origin story for Alien.
And actually, from what I heard is if you have the Blu-ray with all the extras, it ties the movie together a lot better.
Really? Because, yeah. I mean, it took me a while to kind of catch on. I said, okay, that looks like that from Alien. And yeah, they alluded to like that was the where...
Right.
Yeah. So... didn't do it well enough to actually make it... They could have made that way better. But anyway,
I heard, it was supposed to be a sort of like in the universe, but kind of an alternate origin. Like, it's not really directly tied to Alien and Aliens. Like,
yeah.
But
did you not see the end of the movie?
I watched the whole movie. And I've read a lot of reviews, and I've seen a lot of people talk about it and say horribly negative things about it. A fair amount of which I agree with.
I mean, there was so much negative to say about it. I mean, I was watching, I was just, good Lord, you know, this is what we need to accept on faith that this happened? No, come on.
Worst episode ever. Sorry.
I'm a space biologist.
in the Prometheus. That's part of how they tie it together.
What's that, Pete?
There's a lot more computer-generated Paul Reiser in Prometheus directors.
The guy's a marine biologist, or he's a biologist, and so he's the one that's going to take his helmet off and do stuff. I mean, it just
I know they just go. We're gonna, oh look, there's a building over there. Let's go inside and let's take our helmets off, and let's go back to the ship. And then after something horrible happens, then they decide to quarantine them. I think this is just no. We got to speed this along to get up to this ending that's going to blow your mind. And then it doesn't blow your mind.
My friend who watched it was kind of excited. He thought it was pretty good. And then he went online and started reading reviews.
And he changed his mind?
Well, actually, what really upset him was he started reading all this stuff about how it was basically like a Christ analogy. And he hadn't realized that. And then when he started reading it, he was thinking back. And he's like, yeah. Oh, I don't like it. That's too obvious. I thought it was better, deeper than that.
I thought it was deeper than that. I read too much deepness into it. All right, 713-526-5738. Groomhouse.
Yes.
Who's up?
All right, up next on the show, we're going to speak with Wesley.
Wesley, you're on the air.
Hi. I was trying to get rid of this annoying toolbar I accidentally downloaded called Babylon, but while you were talking... I fixed the problem.
Good.
The SpyBot search and destroy, it seemed to have finally taken care of it.
Okay.
But concerning that age-old question, nerds, is it nature or nurture? That was a good line of conversation, guys. What's going on? Good night.
Good night. Thank you for your call. All right, yeah, I actually wrote a column for the Chronicle on removing the Babylon toolbar because it will set your home page to Babylon. You have to go to add remove program. You can actually go to add remove programs and uninstall anything with Babylon in the name, and then you have to open up Internet Explorer, go to Internet Options, and under the General tab, you'll see that Babylon is set as your home page, and you just change that. You should be good to go. But I guess SpyBot Search and Destroy will do that as well. All right, 713-526-5738. We've got a little bit of time before the end of the first hour here on Technology Bytes, so if you want to be on the air with us, give us a call. 713-526-KPFT. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who is up next?
All right, up next on the show, we're going to speak with Richard.
Richard, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Good evening. I have just given up my Northgate keyboard, and being of a certain age, I'm used to having the control key immediately to the left of the A key, and I'd like to see if there's a way in Windows 7 that I can remap the shift lock that's there to the control key.
I'm sure it could probably be done. Barrett is doing something unconventional. He's using Google and the internet to find the answer to this question. Change the shift lock key behavior.
Yeah, there's a region and language section in the control panel. So if you go to the control panel, and then you go to regional language, there's a keyboards and languages tab, and then you can click change keyboards, and then in there you can actually go in, and there's a turn off cap. There's actually advanced key settings, and then when it says turn off caps lock, you can actually change that to do something other than pressing the caps lock key. I think with Windows 7 you can remap pretty much anything to anything else. I believe. So yeah, just go Google. I just Googled Windows 7 remap shift lock. But if you go to Windows 7 remap keys, I'm sure that'll get you to a set of instructions that'll help you out just as well.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for your call. Bye. All right. 713-526-5738. Have you got the SARS, Jason?
Man, I don't know. I don't know what the deal is.
You can't get us sick, man.
Yeah,
I'm not contagious.
How do you know?
Have
you done any control experiments?
I categorically deny.
He smells virulent to me.
I don't know.
It's just this time of year.
I always get sick after I'm in a room with somebody who said, I'm not contagious. Never fails.
That's what they said at the stand, too, I think.
Stephen King nerd. All right, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. The first clue I got that Prometheus was an alien thing was when the android got ripped apart and he sounded just like the android and alien talking through those like wet tubes. I said, God, that's just like Alien. Wait a minute. There was an android and alien and he was evil too. Oh my God! All right, and this is all you know on a plane coming back from Germany. So
it was on a tiny screen. On a plane.
Yeah, aliens on a plane. 713
Samuel L. Jackson.
713-526-573. I've seen this movie before. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up?
All right, up next on the show, we're going to speak with Ozzy.
Ozzy, you're on the air.
Hey, well, I downloaded this, I guess, antivirus thing for my computer because I thought my computer was, like, maybe not some type of virus. I don't know. But it was called AVG.
Yeah.
And it was like a free one I found like off of a website. But I get like a pop-up like every 3 minutes when I'm on my laptop now that I have it on there. And it's from AVG. And, I mean, it's actually pretty annoying. I'm wondering how can I, like, how to get it off? And then what do I, do you recommend something better than that?
AVG is a fine program. There's nothing wrong with AVG. The free version of AVG works just fine, and it should not annoy you if you've configured it properly. So if you're tired of the pop-ups and you want to get rid of it, certainly you can uninstall it and it will stop popping up. But if you could tell me what the pop-up actually says, then I might be able to point you in the right direction for disabling that.
Well, it keeps on, even though change it to my Yahoo homepage, it keeps on changing itself back to that as its homepage.
Right. Well, there's a setting when you install AVG that it asks you if you want to make changes, if you want to set AVG as your search engine, if you want to set AVG as your homepage. So I would recommend that you uninstall it and then get everything set back the way you want it to, and then go back through the install for AVG and pay attention to what it's asking you. Use the custom install and don't let it take over your home page. There's an option to say, look, don't change my home page. No, don't change my home page, and don't change my search engine, and that'll take care of that. Because you need to if you pay attention when you're installing it, it'll tell you what it's going to do to your system.
Okay. So you do recommend that?
I think AVG is a fine, one of the several very good antivirus programs that are available out there. It's a small footprint one, but if you're looking for an alternative to that, and you could run into the same problem with another antivirus, but there's another one called Kaspersky. It's Kaspersky. It's also a good antivirus and a free one as well.
Oh,
great.
Cool. Thanks.
Good to know. All right. Thanks for your call. Yeah, I was actually playing with AVG today, looking at the install process to help somebody else with a problem they were having. And if you don't pay attention to what it's going to do, it'll sets up toolbars, changes your home page and all that. And that's designed partially to help protect your web browsing, but also so they can drive search engine revenue through their stuff as well, because they give away their program for free. They still need to find a way to make money off of it. All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. I thought we had a call in the queue, but apparently we do not. So all of the lines are open and available to you. We are approaching the top of the hour. We're going to have to take a break at the top of the hour, but we'll come back after that. But we got a few minutes right now. If you want to call in, 713-526-5738 or 713-526-KPFT. You got a Barrett time coming up?
I just typed the last word of Barrett time, yeah.
Did you save it?
Yes, okay. It's saved. I don't think anything could go wrong at this point.
Oh, that's
tempting fate.
All right, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT.
Nothing can go wrong at this point, so let's take off our helmets and go into that building.
Yeah, all right, well, there's some lines lighting up, so that's a good sign. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about the Prometheus movie. I mean, it dawned on me all at the end at what was happening there, but it still didn't tie all together very well. So, trying to think if there was... Watching stuff in small format on the back of your plane seat.
Not the best way, probably, to experience it, I'm assuming.
No, I watched Batman Returns. I hadn't seen that yet, so I saw that on the back of a plane seat. It was okay. You would think having that screen like 5 inches from your face would make the experience a lot better, but no. All right, well, let's cold call one of these lines here, or unless Groovehouse has got somebody. Yeah, it's called call line 3. Technology Bites, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. I have a question about an iPhone. Can you guys handle that one?
Yeah.
Okay. My question is this. My niece believes that someone has installed some sort of spyware on her cell phone, and she's wondering how she can tell for sure that that has happened, and then how she can get rid of it.
Well, I guess the first question would be, why does she believe this to be true?
Because someone is texting her and telling her things that she has texted to other people, or to another person in particular, and they're also, like, sending pictures back that she sent to that person, and the person that she... Yeah, the two individuals are not even friends together, so she's wondering why, and she thinks basically it was like an ex-boyfriend that did that to her phone.
He probably went in there and set up some kind of sharing on her photo stream, because there's some permissions on the iPhone. If you go into the photo stream, that tells you how you can share. I haven't set that up myself, but I know that there's some sharing options on your photo stream. So I would make one thing she could do. I mean, if she wanted to start from scratch, is she could reset the iPhone back to the way it was when she bought it.
Okay.
And then she could reload her her apps back onto it. But let me see what the photo says. So,
like wiping the phone?
Yeah, basically wipes the phone out and puts it all back to factory fresh, and then she resyncs it to iTunes.
Did she, just out of curiosity, did she give her phone to someone else, or did someone else actually have physical possession of her phone, or is she worried that this is happening, like someone's remotely doing something with her phone?
Her ex-boyfriend had her phone at one point in time, and, you know, I don't know their relationship.
It's not likely going to be a spyware situation. It's going to be a setting that got set up on there.
Okay, well, because someone is texting her things that she texted to her new boyfriend and saying, I see that you said this to so-and-so. You know, it's like, really? I mean, how else would they know that?
Well, like, I don't know about the texts, unless he changed a contact in her contacts to include him.
Possibly. If you had the phone, there are some things out there that's like parental controls that you can install on an iPhone that will, you know, like CC things elsewhere to where you can see what your kids are doing on the iPhone. So that's what I was thinking. If someone actually had physical control, and if this is kind of an outline kind of thing, but they could install some stuff like that. And if that's the case, I would treat it, you know, like you would treat like a compromised server in the IT world. I would just reinstall from known good clean media, which just means reimaging the phone, you know, doing a factory.
Right. There's a factory reset where you can go onto the phone and basically just tell it that you want to wipe everything out and start from scratch. And that would...
You would know for sure at that point.
Yeah, certainly at that point, the phone would be clean. And then if she exercises caution when she goes back and reinstalls her apps, you know, from the App Store, then they would just, she would have regained control of the phone.
Okay, so she should back it up to iCloud?
Well, if she backs it up to iCloud, yeah, she wants to save all of her photos and stuff, but when she restores, she wants to make sure she doesn't restore, you know, any apps that she doesn't recognize.
Okay.
All right?
So I'll tell her to restore the photo part, but just go back and redo all the apps from
From the App Store, right.
Okay, great.
All right.
I appreciate your help, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call. Bye.
All right.
All right, well, we got to take a short break here, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes here on Technology Bites. Oh, I thought it was time.
Yeah, is this
our clock 15 right seconds?
Time? 15 seconds. Okay, well, you're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
You're Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's...
Groovehouse.
And
he's Justin.
Just visiting.
Marigani, this is Deloitte Parker, member of the Greater Houston Area Kwanzaa Committee, inviting you to join us in celebration of Kwanzaa
Umoja, the first night of Kwanzaa, the 26th of December, the third ward multi-service center, that's Ferry 611 Ennis. We're inviting you to join us at KPFT broadcasting live, the 12th annual KPFT Kwanzaa radio broadcast. That's Wednesday again, December 26th, 2012. From 6 p.m. until 8 p.m., the broadcast will take place, but the celebration will last until 11 o'clock p.m. that night. Fellowship with us. Join us again, Wednesday, December 26th. That's the night of Umoja. Kwanzaa.
KPFT reminds you that there's still time to donate your car, boat, RV, or motorcycle to get a tax receipt for 2012. It's easy and just takes a few minutes. Call our toll-free number at 1-855-573-8227. That's 855-KPFT-CAR. Or visit us online at kpft.org. And click on More Ways to Give on our homepage. We are listener-sponsored, commercial-free, Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you
Barrett Time! Barrett Time! Barrett Time!
Yeah. That means it's time for
Barrett Time!
Yeah. Anyway, take it away, Barrett.
All right. We've had a long string of Barrett Times in the absentia since Thanksgiving, so we're back with an abbreviated Barrett Time, just because. So we've survived the end of the Mesoamerican long count calendar, made it through Christmas, and we probably won't see you again until 2013. There isn't too much in the way of user group meetings before the end of the year, giving you lots of time to go out and try to find a new Mayan calendar. Does anyone know if there's any pre-Columbian calendar stores in the Heights? No. I don't think anyone's had to buy one of those since August 11th, 3114 BC, and the proliptic Gregorian calendar since September 6th, and the Julian calendar, depending on how you care to correlate your long and short count calendar conversions. Excuse me. I can hope that I can find something with, I just hope I can find something with cats in it. January promises to be a bit livelier, as we have both an upcoming Geek Gathering as well as Houston's first Mini Maker Fair. The Geek Gathering will take place at our newest digs at Cone's Wine, Darts, Coffee, and Art at 2808 Mile of Madrew in Midtown Houston. Come geek out over everyone's new goodies, and be sure to bring your own if you got something electronic in lieu of a lump of coal this year. Coffee and beer are available, as is free Wi-Fi and geeky camaraderie. Things get started a little after 7 and generally go until 10 or 11. Food can be found close by, but most of the places close at 8. Outside food is welcome, and a few places will deliver directly to the establishment. Again, Cones is located at 2808 Milam at Drew, and you may want to bundle up as we're often outside. We'll also be doing some light organizing for the Houston Mini Maker Fair, so if you'd like to help man or woman the booth, be sure to stop by and speak with me. And by light organizing, I mean talking about things from a 30,000-foot view over a pint or two. If you've ever brought anything out, if you've ever brought anything you built to the Geek Gathering, you're probably an excellent candidate to help us hold down the fort. Hit www.geekradio.com for details and directions to the gathering, and MakerFairHouston.com for info to the Houston Mini Maker Fair. And that's fair, spelled F-A-I-R-E. And though the end of the world as we know it didn't quite happen, it is the end of the last industrial revolution, at least according to the economist Robert J. Gordon of Northwestern University. He claims that the first industrial revolution ran from 1750 to 1830 and was powered by steam and railroads. The second industrial revolution was brought about by electricity, the internal combustion engine, running water, indoor toilets, communications, entertainment, chemicals, and petroleum. This ran from 1870 to about 1900, and the last industrial revolution, the one of computers, the web, and of mobile phones, started in 1916, is nearly run its course, as all the new tech is fun and new, but not really all that fundamental. Again, this is probably just fear, uncertainty, and doubt. The internet age is just getting going, but the age of Barrett Time has come to a close. That's it for 2012, and that's that for Barrett Time.
Barrett Time. Yeah, finally.
Short, yeah. I was going to say I couldn't do this one, but I had to, you know, it's been like 2 months of no Barrett Time, so we'll be back with full Barrett Time in 2013, yeah.
Promises.
Yeah, work is just ugly right now. So
what are we doing at Anchors Fair? What do we got going?
So the idea is, and I think KD5 kind of got us into this, is that we are going to be manning a table with, you know, like a whole bunch of Arduino and, like, you know, like making things with electronics kind of thing, but we're also going to be promoting the Geek Gathering is a place to come out, you know, and bring that kind of stuff or haul out your gear, you know, that kind of thing. So it's very loosey-goosey.
How are y'all going to say haul out your gear?
Haul out your gear. Bung.
I don't
yes.
get it.
It's at a Monty Python. Monty Bring Python. Out your dead.
Oh, I was thinking it might be like some kind of sailor hauling shanty or something, but that's just me.
That's because you're a sailor geek. Sailor you thought geek. I was going to say Sailor Moon.
Well, you know, you know,
this we don't want to get those guys.
In all of your geek acronyms like LOL and RMFLAO and stuff, there's one FFS, right?
Right.
Well, I know what that stands for.
I thought there were two.
Well, there's FFS in the modern geek culture, but it will always be Flying Fish Sailors to me.
Of course it will.
But somebody posted a picture of an FFS sticker, and I was like,
yeah.
Yeah!
Was that overlap intended when you guys did that? Was that even a consideration?
That didn't exist when we came. I mean, there was internet culture was, you know, we predate internet culture.
That's kind of like, for me, it's kind of like...
I don't even think amplifiers existed when y'all were...
See, for me, it's kind of like FTW. Right, like
yeah.
I got it out of tattoo culture. Uh-oh. It does not mean for the win.
Oh no, it means something else. Yeah,
yeah.
Do I want to Google this or not?
Yes, do it.
Oh, you don't know?
It's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
And so when I saw FTW, when I saw people saying that in gaming culture, I thought that's what they were saying.
There was a band that used that for their stickers and stuff, or there that was a band or something.
Go to the Urban Dictionary for FTW.
Yeah.
Come on, you don't know?
Come on.
Oh. So you saw that in a game? And that's why those guys had those color of uniforms. Okay.
All right, 713-526-KPFTW. All right.
What?
You can dial that.
That's true.
It won't get you.
Won't get you here, yeah.
713-526-5738 or 713-526-KPFT.
You can dial 713-526-KPFTW. Yeah.
That's true, because it'll ignore the last digit. That's right. Okay, you're right. All right, so, we invite you to be on the air for the second half of Technology Bites. And Justin, if you were going to answer a question, what would it be about? Well, if somebody wanted to call in and get the Justin experience.
Oh, gosh. I don't want to.
Just in time.
We want to. I don't want to.
It was just in time.
I don't want.
Just in time.
Time is actually pretty cool.
That would be a great segment.
Not just in case. No. I'm sorry. Yeah. No, I would want to entertain people. I wouldn't want them to glaze over. So, you know, there's like that fine line, I think, between nerd and geek, really. Like, you slip into something and then go off and then you realize, oh, darn, I lost my audience and it was a long time ago. You know, I wouldn't
kind of like when you look up at the bar at DEF CON and realize everybody's gone to the next party. Oh, wait for me. What happened to Justin?
That happen. Okay.
That's all right. He'll give you his badge.
Oh, my God.
DEF CON stories. They're
so you're saying people need to call in and demand you entertain them.
Oh, no.
Is that?
I'm on the spot. Hey, I will answer any question that comes my way, I suppose, that I can say on the air.
Is there a perfect question?
Gosh, computer history is kind of fun. I'm, you know, nobody can know everything about it, but that's a fun topic. How we got here.
How we got here?
Yeah.
Existential time?
Why is there war?
All right, tonight on Technology Bites, Second Amendment.
Oh, no. The phone lines are lighting up. Stop it, Jay.
Speaking of that, I was actually...
Speaking of that.
Just buying some ammo earlier.
Hmm. Well, good for you. Got nut.
Yeah, I got my young nephew's marshmallow guns for Christmas and a book on, like, I think it was, like, mini weapons of mass destruction. Like, MINI. I did a lot before, you know, the incident.
How to
so
convert,
I was like,
and
is still
on, like, how to convert a marshmallow into, like,
a fully automatic...
flammable piece of
napalm. Into a s'mores cannon?
No, but I can make a trebuchet out of clothespins now. So don't mess with me.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah. You're going to do Siege, my castle? I will Is that what the kids are calling it?
It did, trebuchets seem weird. Like, they look like a giraffe when it runs.
They will mess you up, though.
They look like awkward. A giraffe when it runs and trips on a rock and does a little flip. There's a great event, and I don't remember where it is. It's somewhere in the United States, but there's three or four categories. One of them is trebuchets.
Is it the pumpkin chunking stuff?
Yeah. Stuff. Yeah. Yeah. And that's pretty awesome.
See, if only I thought to build a mini trebuchet to fight back against my tormentors in high school, everything would have been so different.
Yeah.
713-526-5738.
Your medieval weapons.
Stay right there and wait for 30 minutes.
You would have had exactly the same thing happen and a broken trebuchet.
Yeah, that's probably true.
It was always a war of attrition for me. I figured the toilet had to run out of water eventually. or the underwear would finally just give.
you wore like paper riffable underwear. Who got the last laugh now?
Sucker.
I'm not wearing any.
Joke's on you. That's your underwear. 713-526-5738. Yeah, I guess the difference between nerd and geek is which one doesn't get you beat up in high school.
Because that's what I am. That's what you should say.
Whatever it is that gets you beat up, that's what I was.
It's like Americans when they travel abroad saying they're Canadian. It's kind of the same tactic.
No, I get it. So if you're a nerd in high school and got beat up, you would call yourself a geek to avoid it as an adult?
Possibly.
I like where this is going. I still don't think it makes a lot of sense. But
no.
Congratulations to George, who has managed to make his conversation go as long as it has with that question. All right, so there's no calls in the queue. No one's taken Justin up on his existentialism request.
Why don't you talk about like the origin of the x86 processor?
Oh my. Well, then, gosh.
I'm not talking about like, you know, Texas Instruments history of silicon, specifically the x86 chip.
So, wow.
Or the 8086.
While we fact check you on.
Yes.
No pressure.
I'm so going to be wrong. This is going to be great. I'm just going to talk out of my butt here for a second, and we'll see what happens. But I think.
And on the air, you listeners will just have to imagine him talking out of his butt. We'll actually see it.
I'm going. And then everyone here will start to ask me a few questions. I'm sorry. But at any rate. Yeah, so I mean, one of the biggest significance of the Intel processor, the Intel 8086 processor, was that it was the first one that was chosen for the IBM personal computer. Back when they thought, oh, hardware's the way to go, and Microsoft's kind of some little joke that's going to license software. No one does that, right? So its significance is that, because it basically started Wintel, and now even Mac runs on it. But its origins went back further than that. I want to say we're totally going to get fact checked here. I thought that it was created in 1977, but it might have been the 8080. There's 8088 and 8086, and the 8086 I want to say had capability for like rudimentary capability for multiprocessing. And let's see. Gosh, that is just faded. I think that's about all I've got. I could say that at least it's a.
It's about 16-bit systems around 8 megahertz is what they first shipped with. So really, the scary thing is it's the equivalent of today's Arduino. And even, like, the faster Arduinos have just eclipsed.
Yeah.
You know, what we had to deal with back then, what we had to work with as far as, you know, state-of-the-art desktop machines.
And it didn't have protection. Like, the 286 was the first one to come along that had the privilege, like, 0 through 3 privilege levels, right? So as far as, like, writing secure operating systems, it would be very challenging to do that.
And it was originally designed by Bob Ross, who went on to do a lot of painting on PBS.
Yes. Halo Cloud.
That fact checks out. Fox News says yes. Although he left out the tubes part somehow.
Yeah. He said when he left the Air Force he was never going to yell again, and that's exactly what happened.
So what was the first computer it was in?
Well, okay, so I know that Unix was actually a target, or Xenix ran on it for a while. I thought MS-DOS, I don't think MS-DOS was the very first thing to run on it, actually. It was the most known thing to run on it, but...
What piece of hardware? Like, viable piece of hardware?
Wow. Wait, no. No, the Altair didn't run that, did it? Wow.
You're not going to get that. I didn't even know this one. Seattle Computer Products shipped the first 8086-based machine. It was called the S100.
Okay. And it didn't. Did it even have an OS? Did it ship with an OS, or was it a hobbyist?
Probably, you know, I don't know.
Wiki is unclear.
I think that company did hobbyist stuff.
I think a lot of people back then were hobbyists. I think IBM was really the one that actually took the, you know, the PC, as it were, to the everyone's desktop and made it kind of a not so much a uber geeky, uber nerdy kind of thing.
See, we're going to kind of get an idea of if we have any nerds or geeks listening, because we're just saying crazy stuff,
and
they're going to get so upset that they're going to have to call us to correct us.
Correct.
Somebody may be doing that right now. 713-526-5738. Processors. I'm just glad they're not 86s anymore.
Yeah.
286s, 386s, 486s. Pentium. That's like.
Yeah.
That was when.
That was still 586. It was still x86 architecture.
Yeah.
586 instructions.
They just end of life the 8086 not too long ago too. I know they've dropped final support because they were showing up in like old machine. You know, not necessarily old things, but very, you know, low power, random kind of things. Oh no, you know what it was? Linux kernel just dropped 8086 support. Not even 2 or 3 weeks ago.
But it retained 386, right? Or 386 is still retained.
I don't know.
That I need to check.
I don't think so, actually. I don't think
the Mayan apocalypse may have happened, but we didn't know what we were looking for. All right, 713-526-5738. I see calls coming in. Groovehouse is screening calls. I'd like to give Groovehouse the opportunity to hand us a call, so we're going to wait till he gets off the phone. All right, Groovehouse.
Ready for some calls?
We are. What do you got for us?
All right, first up we're going to take is John.
John, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yeah, I want to see how I can hitch a Timex Sinclair up to my 12-core Mac and read all the data in there.
That's a Justin question.
Wow. So does the Timex Sinclair still work?
Yeah, I've got Commodore 64s, VIX 20s, you know.
Is it an original Timex, or is it the Timex 2048 or 2068?
I'm not sure. It's black. It's
weird. It's the original one. The original one is black and has the mnemonic pad on it, and then they made a later version. I think they had 4K instead of 2K memory, and was silver, and actually had little buttons for the keys instead of the little membrane.
Yeah.
But the original one was the membrane.
Yeah, I was getting off y'all's talking about the 8600. What do you think about the IBM PC Junior they had way back then?
It had a limit of 256 megs of RAM, I think it was. I think it was the first machine I played King's Quest on. That was a. But so the Timex Sinclair, are you trying to get all the things off of your tapes, or is it?
Well, this is more of a rhetorical question. It really, I have to hold the wires to make it work. So I was just gonna stick it to the main man, see if he could figure that out. That's weird, you're not trying to figure that out. But
that's awesome.
My main question is really, I'm gonna give you a serious question. Is kind of like everybody's got, you know, the Mac laptops, and then they got the iPads. And my friend, he's sitting here. He wants to know. If he's going to do a little recording studio, should he get an iPad or should he get a Mac with everything on it, or just get a big?
Well, if he's going to do a recording studio, he's going to want a desktop computer with lots of hard drive space and memory and all of that. That being said, depending on what he's recording to now, if he wants to record to a hard drive, now I know a guy who's the sound man at the Continental Club who is using his iPad as a recording studio. Now he outputs the audio to something else, but he can bring all the audio into his iPad, dials up all the controls and levels, and he can, I don't know how many channels he's doing, but he's got an adapter that allows him to do at least 8 channels, if not 16 channel recording on the iPad, do the mixing, and then send it to another computer or hardware. What do you got there, Justin? He's got the application loaded on his iPhone.
You can't actually do it on
You can do it. You can do it on the iPad and the iPhone, but it really depends on what his, what he wants to do in terms of output. If you're trying to do a professional recording studio, there's computer setups that are recommended to do that for running the soft, depending also on the software.
Yeah.
If he already has software that he likes, I don't know. I don't know all the name brands for the software used in recording studios, but
yeah. Well, they got Digital Performer, Pro Tools. You know,
yeah, Pro Tools. That's what I was thinking. I don't know that there's an exact equivalent for that on the iPad, but I don't think an iPad as a recording studio is quite there yet.
Yeah, I know they have GarageBand that works on there.
Yeah.
GarageBand is nice for sketching. I mean, if he's, he just wants to have something on the coffee table to do, and one of the nice things about it is it has some built-in instruments. So you can just, without even picking up an instrument, put some drums on it, and then go back with another track for keyboard, and then sing on top of it. And then take those files off and put it maybe in your professional rig and start, you know, actually working with it.
Okay, well, listen, I appreciate your help there, and if I ever get my Commodore 64 working, I'll call you back. Thank you.
Do that. All right. Thanks.
Well, actually, you should probably just take it and put it in a blender and then pour it into your other device.
Hey, that's my first computer.
This is weird. So I'm on practicallynetwork.com, and there's no section for the Sinclair 1000.
You really expected there to be? You seem genuinely stunned. All right, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT Groovehouse.
Yes.
What do we have?
Up next on the show, we're going to speak with Clay.
Clay, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
I have a pretty new laptop. It's an HP running Windows 7. And I don't know if it has to do with updating my flash recently, but I noticed it right after that when I try to turn off Firefox, it goes away from the screen, but if I look at my task manager, it shows up there, and if I open a new Firefox, it's got two instances running and several Flash Player plugin instances at the same time. And even using CCleaner, it won't force a shutdown for Firefox, and I'm kind of perplexed.
Well, have you tried just uninstalling Firefox and reinstalling it?
No, I haven't.
And you're running the latest version of it?
Yeah. I mean, would I lose my bookmarks and everything if I did that?
You can save your bookmarks.
Yeah, you can save them or export them, so you can take those with you.
Well, chances are that they're, you know, and it may just be a matter of going in and maybe uninstalling all the Flash stuff and then reinstalling Flash from scratch.
Uh-huh.
Might solve that issue for you, but go into Firefox and manage the add-ons and the plugins and make sure that... I remember that there was... Was it Shockwave or Flash or one of the ones that... One of the plugins that Firefox used that was no longer compatible with the newer version of Firefox.
Those should automatically disable themselves, though. You can also try going into Tools Options, and then if you go to Main Startup, and there is a When Firefox Starts settings, and make sure that you've got it deselected, the one that says Shows My Tabs and Windows from the last time.
Okay, Tools Option, and then go to Where Applications.
I believe it's Main / Startup. And do you see When Firefox Starts? I'm not on a Windows 7 machine, but I can follow along on a Mac.
Startup. Well, I don't know where that's at.
Let's see.
What are you looking for?
Tools option. I'm going from the Firefox help page, but it says if you go to Tools options, Main / Startup.
Why don't you do this? Why don't you just go online and use your Firefox to Google this term?
Okay.
Firefox multiple. What was the term that you used?
I just did.
Google search Firefox multiple windows open at startup. That might be one thing to try, but I'm guessing it's gonna. You know, if you go into your tools and you can, what were you having them do? Go and change what?
Just saying, hey, when Firefox starts up, I want it to start up with a single page and go to this page because maybe you've got something that's not quite closing in the background, like maybe a bit of like an invisible tab or something. And each time you restart that's coming back. So if you say, hey, start up clean with nothing. That might make a bit of a difference.
The other option is you can also just try running Firefox. You can start Firefox up without loading any extensions or plugins.
Right.
And if you fire it up that way and then close it down, see if it terminates normally. And then if it does, then you have to kind of go through your plugins and add-ons and determine which one's causing the problem that you're having.
Okay.
I mean, there's not a one-stop quick answer for your question. Unfortunately, it's going to require that you do a little work and digging to see if you can sort it out, but just based on what you're telling me, it sounds like Firefox is loading an extension or loading an add-on that it's not able to deal with properly, and when you go to shut it down, it's not terminating properly, and you have to kind of go digging to find out what it is that's actually causing that issue. The other thing you might try is just, back up your bookmarks, uninstall Firefox, reboot system, reinstall Firefox, and see if that doesn't clear it up for you.
All right,
good luck. Thanks for your call.
Thanks a bunch.
All right, sure.
All right, here's my next question.
All right.
This is background info that isn't really related exactly, but I have a TI-99/4A and I have a 256K external memory module, and that thing weighs like 20-something pounds. I've never taken it apart, but I'm wondering if it's like actually like ferrite coils. Like, I don't know. It's really heavy in there.
I don't think so. I think there's still going to be microchips.
Huge,
but
heavy.
I want to see.
It's like bigger than a bread box and weighs seriously like 20 pounds probably at least. And it's 256K.
That's awesome.
So that kind of relates to my next question for you, which is, what was the original format of hard drives available for PCs? Because it was not IDE.
MDM or MFM? I'm trying to remember the name.
There was an MLM, I think.
Yeah, and it was...
But I don't know what the original was. I just remember back in the very early days when I would go into computer stores and they would have hard drives for sale. You had to know what kind of hard drive adapter you had because you could get the wrong one. There were three that I remember seeing. One was MLM, and one was IDE, and one was something else before EIDE.
Remember when you had to type? You had to actually type in the number of cylinders
and sectors and heads
in the BIOS.
And you had to.
Yeah, you had to. Yeah.
There was no auto detect for that stuff.
No, it was.
And in fact, the first computer that I ever bought, bought a computer was a Packard Bell 386, and it had that information wrong in the BIOS, and it would not boot up.
Oh, that's what started your foray into computer culture, right?
Yes, it started into, like, I have two choices. I can drive all the way back to Fort Hood and exchange this thing, or I can figure it out. I'll open up the manual and see if I can figure it out, and I figured it out and made those settings, and it booted right up, and it ran fine ever since. So... It's like, oh yeah, the manual, and it was in there. It was in the manual. It talked about how to configure the hard drive and BIOS, you know, and your eyes bled as you tried to figure out if that's the thing that you were at. What the hell is a BIOS? I mean, what am I doing here? Okay, there's got to be a reason why this is happening.
Justin, BIOS.
Basic input output system. What?
Very good.
Okay.
It's not the question, but.
What about the BIOS?
Free association. How do you spell it? Don't choke on your own.
Hummus. I don't know.
Hummus.
BIOS. Needed for the proper functioning of any machine. Otherwise, it doesn't.
The BIOS, is that a cross between the BOS and the iOS?
Gosh, I don't know, but they both handle media well.
If you want to have a recording studio, you'll need a BIOS.
Yeah. Yes, you will.
713-526-5738. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next on the show, we're going to speak with Charles.
Charles, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Oh, good evening. I'm out here in the boonies.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking for a way to get online with my computer. And I'm wondering about 4G. How fast is that? And how do I find out whether it's actually going to work out on my section of the county when, without first buying it and then going, oh, well, I guess it doesn't work and I've got a paperweight.
Where in the boonies are you? Like, how? Are you near, like, a highway or anything? Are you, like, out on
FMs? Yeah, I'm, like, near Highway 71.
I don't think 4G's out there.
71 and what?
71 and the county line.
They have maps, right? Like if you go to certain carriers.
Well, first of all, if you're looking,
or do they have it for 4? Do they have it for 4G, or is it just for
the only people that are going to possibly be covering that area? Maybe is going to be somebody like Verizon might have coverage out there. But here's the real question: I mean, if you're talking about cellular broadband as your internet connection, how much data are you talking about pulling down? Because a lot of the companies that sell it have a cap on how much data you can actually use. So if you're talking about this as your primary internet connection, there's only a couple of companies that offer cellular broadband for a reasonable monthly rate. One of them is Clear, and they probably don't offer 4G on Clear yet, do they?
Yeah, they do.
They do?
Clear is, WiMAX is 4G.
So if you go to Clear, I guess it's clear.com, they should have a coverage map.
Same thing, Verizon Wireless does too. You can also get satellite service. I know that there's some satellite providers to where if you're too far out for cable, you're too far out for DSL, and you want something, you know, that's going to be kind of permanent for the home, you can get satellite service.
Yeah. I've used satellite services at my brother's house, and some days it works, and some days he crawls.
I'm looking at, like, just a Verizon Wireless map of their... Now, they've got 3G coverage where you are, and you can still get data over 3D, but their 4G LTE coverage, they're pinpointed in major cities. It's not like it's just out in the countryside. Okay. It's major metropolitan areas, and because they're still working hard to build out those networks, and they're going where the population is densest, and it's probably not going to be 71 of the county lines.
But I was going to say, but some days of satellite working and some days not is better than no days of internet.
Yeah. True.
Yeah.
There's another option out in a lot of rural areas that you can have some, since no one else is really competing from the market, if you really don't have hardly any coverage at all, you can find radio line of sight providers. Like, I have a friend who lives in Rozanki that's out there, like 13 miles south of 71 in Bastrop. And they... they also happen to have a 55-foot tower on their property, but they have a...
I don't have a 55-foot tower.
But it's not necessarily a problem. It just, they happened to need it, and it was good enough for them that they're able to share it with their friends and even offset the cost and not have to pay anything for it. So it's a possibility. You might just Google for rural...
I looked at that, and there's a town nearby that if I had literally a 50 or 70-foot tower, I could... line of sight to their dish in town, and I'd be good.
Yeah,
but I don't.
What's your zip code?
78938.
Just looking unclear what they offer, if they have anything in that. Clear is not currently available in your area.
No. Clear is one of those things too, where it's mainly large metropolitan areas. It's not going to be out there. Now, you can build your own 50-foot guide tower for about $1,500 and a little bit of guts.
Unfortunately, in the rural areas, the most reliable is going to be satellite. And even though that's not completely reliable, it's subject to problems when there's cloud cover or atmospheric
and
stuff.
And it's not good for gaming.
Well, it's because of the way it sends packets back and forth. It waits until the packet is full and then sends it, so it's not like constantly streaming data. So it's kind of laggy. So if you're doing online gaming and stuff like that or streaming movies, it won't work very well for that.
Okay. You could download something.
But you could download something. You could download it at pretty good speeds, but also check. I also know that who is the main satellite provider?
Probably Hughes. I'm thinking out there.
They have some very bizarre data caps too, so check what they actually allow you, how much data they allow you to take down. Because they'll slow you down. So it may be that the issue your friend was having, if he's exceeding their cap, then they will throttle it. They'll reduce the transfer speed for a period of time until it cycles through again. That's usually 30 days. So if you say they might have a 2 gig or a 4 gig cap on that, he downloads 4 gigs of data in the first 3 or 4 days of the month, and then the rest of the month it's going to be slow until it recycles.
Okay. And what I tried to do was download some updates for the operating system, and it ran all night and didn't get anywhere, and then all of a sudden, 30 minutes the next morning, it goes, boop,
yeah,
done.
It's hard to say on that, but again, because of it's just unfortunate that the rural areas right now are not well covered when it comes to broadband internet.
Okay, what are the chances if I go to a Ford dealer and ask him if it's a good idea to buy a Ford? He says yes, but if I go on Verizon's site and they say, do you have coverage here? And they say yes, does that mean yes, or does it mean...
It should mean yes, but I doubt they're going to say that they will, and you've got to be careful as far as what coverage. But like I said, I was looking at, they actually have service maps for Verizon, so you can go and see where the coverage is, and there's no 4G where you are. Your better bet may be to go to something like dslreports.com or wirelessisp.info, and it looks like there is Advanced Wireless Solutions, there is a Texas... There are a couple. There's Texas Wireless Internet. There is some small, and I hate to say mom and pop shops, but some very small ISPs that serve rural kind of residents. And you might be lucky enough to be inside one of their coverage areas, or they might even be willing to build out to you. But DSL reports, all one word, is a good place. That's kind of where people go to talk about like what's available in their area. It's where you can get, you know, opinions on, you know, Fords and Chevys and everything like that from people that aren't selling Fords and Chevys to, you know, complete your model there.
Okay, so DSL reports. All right, that's good. All right. The only other complaint I've got is that I'm about 15 miles outside of KPFT's coverage. I have to drive to town to get KPFT. So there's no chance that KPFT is going to expand the power on their tower, huh?
Well, I think we're as strong as we get right now.
That's FCC regulated,
right? Yeah, we can't just boost the signal, you know, because we feel like it. But we have
If the antenna is directional, they might could turn it toward him.
Could fry him too, but
you know. But that's another good reason for you to build out that 55-foot tower.
You could stream.
Well,
us.
If you could get the internet, then you could stream us to your computer.
Right.
That would be the solution.
One way or the other.
Right.
Okay.
Or you can move. You know, just.
Come to Houston.
Come to town.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid of people.
We have internet.
Yeah, that's right. Come to the big city.
The big city has internet. God. All right. And lots of other things. Okay. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thanks for your call. But, yeah, it's... I don't know if the cellular technology is going to change or evolve into... where you just have coverage, blanket coverage over the entire
nation. Well, that's the thing. I think it's going to have to be, and I hate to say, hey, we need more regulation, but I think it's going to have to come down to the point where Congress or someone says, hey, the internet or broadband access is not so much a privilege as it is, you know, a right. And then they actually mandate that, hey, companies have to build out in these lower density population areas, because otherwise they're never going to do it. You know, why build out for 10 customers where they can drop a single tower in Houston and get, you know, 1,000 customers on that one tower. So
and you'll have all those complaining about internet control.
Yes.
Well, because fax that man some internet.
Should have told him packet over carrier pigeon. You totally messed up that call.
RFC, whatever that was.
2060, yeah. I think.
There you go.
So next question. What was the first full-length movie ever created completely on a computer?
Was that Toy Story, or is there something else before that?
I don't know the answer. That's why I'm asking.
Google on.
I'm asking Justin.
Oh, Justin. What was the first fully animated?
Full-length film.
Well, it was Pixar, and it was...
Was it?
I thought it was. That was the first...
Toy Story?
Toy Story.
Yeah, it was the first ever full-length CG feature. So that's what I'm saying. There's probably other stuff out there.
Oh, okay.
Well, there's short ones, I'm sure, you know. 5-10 minutes. I mean, Pixar had even done some before full length.
And arguably, that was the first commercially successful one, because there were, you know, I saw like a lot of really poorly done animations, you know, floating around years before that, you know, done with like 3D Studio Max and stuff like that.
The first animation I ever saw delivered via the internet was not created on a computer. It was created using paper cutouts.
South Park.
It was the original South Park.
Oh.
And it was a huge, massive download, too, is the Jesus versus Santa episode.
Oh, yeah.
The very first South Park.
It was a video Christmas card, is what it was. It wasn't an actual full episode.
It was made
just for the... What was it, Justin?
Wasn't it the Jesus versus Santa?
It was a full episode.
I thought that was a... It was a Christmas thing, though,
wasn't it? It was a Christmas thing.
Yeah.
But it wasn't made for television.
Right.
It was made for download. It was made for the internet.
Well, but prior to that, it was made just for some executives at Fox or somewhere.
Oh, okay.
Or some animation company or something. It was made just for them as a holiday gift.
Okay.
And then it became viral and became able to be downloaded.
It was a huge download, even on,
right,
on ISDN. Big. All right. 71. What?
I was just going to correct myself. RFC of 2060 was actually IMAP. If you really want to run TCP/IP across carrier pigeons instead of copper, you'll need to refer to RFC 2549.
10-4.
Roger that, good buddy. All right.
End of line.
Go to 10.
(713) 526-5738 as we grind through the last 20 minutes of Technology Bites.
Yes.
The Justin Bieber edition. All right.
Ooh. Now I need a jingle.
All right, Groovehouse.
Yeah.
Who do we have up?
Up next, we're going to speak with Peter.
Peter, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Well, I'm talking about Christmas. Merry Christmas to everyone.
Merry Christmas.
I just got a Dell laptop computer, and to turn it on, it asks you for your name, first name, last name, birthday, zip code. And, I mean, I'm not computer savvy at all. Do all computers do that? I mean, do they want to know your real name? Your
well, chances are, if you bought a new computer, it's probably asking you to register it.
Right, it did.
So are you not wanting to put that information in?
Can I put just any information in there as long as I remember it for later on or what?
Yeah, it's not going to check.
It knows.
No, you can put in whatever you like, but I don't see any reason why you wouldn't put in your information.
Okay. For warranty work later on, maybe.
Right, for you register the product, it has your name, your information. If it's online, it'll probably send that to the vendor. And that way they have a record of when you bought this computer. And so if you have to do warranty work or if you need service on it, they have your record. It's gonna be helpful to you possibly down the road. And I don't see any reason why you wouldn't give it that real information. But you could... You could fudge it if you want to.
Birthday?
Huh?
Even birthday?
You know, yeah. They are wanting to collect maybe more data than they actually need to be able to provide. They're collecting customer information, so you can fudge that data if you want to. They're not going to check your birthday when you do warranty work on
what
it.
What brand of computer is it?
It's a Dell laptop.
Well, I would recommend, you know, look at, see what fields are required. Some fields are not required. Some of them are optional.
Okay.
But, you know, put in your name, you can, or put in your brother's name they don't like.
I did. I asked for my name, birthday, and zip code.
Right, well, the only thing
missing now is my Social Security form.
Well, they're just looking for customer metrics to determine who's buying their computers, where they live, and how old they are for sales demographics.
I see. So it's just... It is what it is.
But, you know, a lot of times, you know, when I get asked for a birth date on certain things that are asked me to register, I use the birth date of my dead brother. So, you know, I just, that way I just remember the birth date in case I need it down the road, but I just use a different birth date. I don't give too many people my real birthday, and I don't give them my legal first name.
Same here.
Yeah, I'll go a few days off. I mean, just remember what it is, or come, like Jay Lee, come up with some kind of mnemonic to where if you're ever questioned by it, like if you actually have to get warranty work and they go, when's your birthday, sir? What was, you know, some security question, you can actually answer that with the question they want.
Okay. Thank you so much. Y'all have a good night.
All right, good night. Thanks for your call.
Thank you. Bye.
You know, how are they going to know where to send the mind control lasers?
Do Dell laptops do that? And you, HP, that's why I asked. I know HP kind of forces you sometimes through, like, that registration
code. Dell,
I didn't think, did that.
I have not seen a home-use Dell in a while, so I don't know for sure. But I'm sure it's just registration. And I'm sure you could turn that off. You could probably, there's probably an option in there that says, you know, not now and don't ask me again. You don't have to register.
If he's still listening, he can always go to the Dell site, and with the service tag, which is that like 6-digit or 8-digit code on the back, you can type that in and you can always register it at a later date.
Well,
so you don't have to do it right then.
Read what it says, because there might be an option to say, you know, close this and don't prompt me again.
On the internet, we don't have names. But in registration, we have a name. His name is Robert Paulson.
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 I don't get it.
Go home and watch Fight Club.
I've watched Fight Club before. I don't remember.
It's a great movie.
It is a good movie. I like when the buildings blow up. All right. Franklin Thomas Wright, you're up next. 713-526-5738. They're having a little Facebook discussion about FTW and FFS. Brittany Shea from the Houston Press, she says that, it's what Flicted thinks it is. Because she associates it with punk culture before hashtags.
Yep.
And actually, it was pre-hashtags.
Pre-punk culture?
No, punk culture and then gaming culture then hashtag culture.
I need to update. I need to comment on my Facebook to Groovehouse says.
No, no.
So it's quite possible I've been offending people for the last several years without knowing it.
FTW.
I'm going to stop wearing that t-shirt.
Especially, yeah, especially when it's in like tattoo scroll.
I've mentioned it before, I'm sure, on the air, but there was that cellular phone commercial where they were giving off all these acronyms, and they were like, you know, OMG, oh my God, that's, and then they were going through and they were doing it, LOL, and then the last one at the end of the commercial was WTF. And they said, wow, that's fantastic. But they let it hang there for a while. It's like, they WTF'd on the air on national television.
One of the first instances I saw of FTW used
incorrectly.
Yeah. It was like the Dell XPS systems, like the high-end gaming Dell systems, and it was a big two-page ad, and it had this big picture of this XPS Dell system, and it said FTW, and I was like, wow, Dell's really getting some edgy stuff, and then I found out it actually didn't stand for what it really should have stood for. It stood for the win.
Nice.
For the Windows. All right. Well, all of our lines have gone quiet. So, FTL. 713-526-5738.
SOL.
TSOL.
Singing out loud.
Oh, true. Yes.
True Sons of Liberty. 713-526-5738 for your favorite acronym. What is your favorite acronym, by the way?
Rafflecopter.
Rafflecopter.
My favorite one is...
Is OMG. Copter an acronym?
No. Mine is I-M-N-S-H-O.
I like HDL. VHDL. Where the V is actually, it's very high-speed integrated circuit hardware deafening. Hardware
deafening. Hardware deafening.
Yeah, that's what it is. Where the V stands for VHSIC, and then it's HDL. So yeah, very high-speed integrated chip hardware definition language.
Wow.
That took some work to remember, yeah.
You're the winner.
That's why it's your favorite.
Yay. Mine's OMG WTF BBQ.
That's a close second.
So mine is IMNSHO, which is a variation on IMHO, which is in my humble opinion. But IMNSHO is in my not-so-humble opinion.
The first time I saw I Am Not a Lawyer, I read that wrong. You know what I'm talking about? You made the same mistake. Yeah. I was like, what?
EPCAC.
All too often.
That's my favorite.
I kind of like PCMCIA. People can't memorize computer industry acronyms.
I thought it was people can't master computer industry, and that it just shows the point. It drives the point home.
It really does.
So, can you help me understand why the I'm Not a Lawyer was funny to you without...
I'll let Flicted take that one. Go, Flicted. He says, it looks a lot like ENAL.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I knew it. I knew what you were going.
It took me a while to... When I saw that acronym, I didn't go there. But.
Like I-A-N-A-L.
Yeah.
What do you do?
All right. 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next, we're going to speak with Tony.
Tony, you're on here.
Well, I heard you had an open line, so I thought I'd call up and at least say season's greetings.
Season's greetings. Thank you.
You're welcome. I like to listen to your show. Every now and then I ask a question, but I'm drawing a blank. So,
well, at least we know people are out there listening, so we didn't know that before. So that's a good sign.
Yeah, that's good. I've got a Mac that I've got a problem with that crashes pretty often. It's a 27-inch iMac, and we've pretty well come to the conclusion that it's the video card. And a guy was telling me that it was a known issue some time back, and that if I got a hold of Apple and pressed them on it, they might wind up replacing my video card with no charge. Have you heard anything about that? It's a G5.
So it's built into the computer, or was it one you built yourself?
Oh, no, it's a standard 27-inch iMac.
Oh, okay.
Is it like the, did you get it late 2009? Is that about when you got it?
No, it was maybe 2007.
Oh.
And what will happen is I'll get the spinning ball. After doing it so many times, I've come to some conclusions. Part of it is that if you make the video card work too fast, then it locks up. And when it gets hot, when it gets hot, it locks up. And I've called on this issue last summer and maybe last spring. It's been an ongoing issue for a while. And I finally got to the point where it was so bad, I had to go back to one of my G4s and continue my work on it. And so I'm working off of a G4 for my newspaper. And then I bought a $250 used iMac. It's about a 17-inch, and I haven't actually put anything on it yet. But the big one, I'd like to get it fixed because the screen size, I can see the full double-wide newspaper pages laid out without having to get a magnifying glass out like Monty Python and hold it in front of the screen constantly.
Mm-hmm. How old is the computer?
Well, let's see. Rita was in...
You said it was 06 or 07.
It was 07.
Is it locking up constantly?
Well, it'll lock up after a few minutes, yeah. Now,
when's the last time you reinstalled the software?
We've done that three times, maybe. Apple at Baybrook did it twice.
Okay. If it's a hardware issue and it's not under warranty, you're going to be hard-pressed. I mean, you're going to have to pay some money to get it fixed.
It looks like the original Apple cards, the video cards that go in there, are pretty expensive. I'm seeing a lot of people that are able to get GeForce cards installed, and it's actually kind of an upgrade. I don't know how adventurous you are as far as, you know, swapping out hardware. It's going to be a little bit tough because it's, you know, it's not sealed, but it's kind of sealed. But there are a few different instructions
out there on doing it. I know the cubes. People used to do that with the cubes, the old Apple cubes.
When you say sealed, is that S-E-A-L-E-D?
Well, yeah, I just mean it's not going to be like your standard PC where, you know, you take out a thumb screw and the side of the case slides out and you swap out the video card like that. It's stacked pretty tight to be able to get everything
in
there.
Okay, well, I've got a Mac guy.
Okay.
He's a certified Mac guy that does all my work.
I mean, you might want to talk to him. I mean, just that if Apple isn't going to cover the price of, you know, of upgrading the video card, and that sounds like such an old machine, I'd be kind of surprised if they did. You can get a GeForce card, so G-E-F-O-R-C-E.
Right.
It's a kind of video card, and there are a few different models that you can get in there, and it looks like they'll work. Mm. So you might want to check that out.
Yeah, well, I've been looking for some used ones that are like the one that's in it, and they're in the $250 range.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They're expensive enough to where I would almost, like, look at, like, instead of going back, like, you know, like 6 years, look and see what, like, a current card does.
So a GeForce, if there's multiple models, what determines the different models?
There's probably going to be one or two that may work, so you're going to... Yeah, you might have to go, like, to iFixit, I think, has some upgrade instructions. But what you'll have to do is you'll have to go and find out the exact model of iMac that you've got. And that'll usually come down to the year. You can look up a serial number, something like that. And then there'll probably only be a couple of cards that'll work, either because of software drivers or because of just how the hardware is going to fit in there. Because, like I said, you don't have a ton of space back there.
It's
pretty tight. But go look. And again, you might be out of luck. You might be seeing out loud on this one. But there's a good chance that you can go in and you can find a card for less than, you know, a couple $100 that I'm seeing them on eBay for, and you get a lot more graphics performance than you would have had, you know, had you just gotten that original replacement card.
Okay, and if everything fails, at some point I'm going to get rid of the machine. Is there any scrap value to it? I mean, I don't want to throw it into the landfill.
It's a 27-inch, right?
27, yeah.
As I understand, can't the 27-inch be used as a monitor?
I don't know.
It still might be a...
That'd be great.
I think the 27-inch iMac is the only iMac where, once the computer's gone, that the iMac itself can be used as a monitor on another computer. So you could conceivably resurrect that with a Mac Mini or connect it up as a second monitor to another computer or a primary monitor to another computer without using the computer part.
Check it out, although that might just be for the iMacs made after 2009, possibly.
I don't,
check out what on them?
It may be that that's only a what I'm thinking of with the monitor capability might be 2009
it's
and newer.
It's worth checking out, though.
Yeah, I mean, I would just check to see if the... you say it's a 2006 iMac?
Right. 2007. January 2007.
27-inch iMac used as monitor.
It says, I'm seeing, like, on the discussions, Apple.com, and this is June 25th, someone's asking if they can use it as an extra monitor, and they're saying no, because the 2007 doesn't support the cable display input like the new 27-inch iMacs do.
Ah, okay.
Right, right.
That's so. Too bad. Yeah, it's kind of one of the regrets I have on buying a 21-inch or whatever, 24, one of the smaller iMacs, is that once it's no longer a computer, it's no longer anything.
They're really cool hardware, like, right. For the first few years when you get them, and I like the idea of having everything just kind of right there, and they look very clean, and they look very elegant, but you're buying something that doesn't really have a great upgrade path. You know, once it goes, it kind of goes, and you're not going to have a lot of success, you know, breathing new life into it like you would, you know, a standard PC, or even just like a, you know, like a G4.
Or a standalone monitor.
Yeah, or a standalone monitor.
Although I will say that the new 27-inch iMac is a thing of beauty.
Yeah.
Absolutely beautiful thing to look at.
So iFixit and GeForce.
Yeah, I would say, or just, you know, Google, you know, iMac 27-inch GeForce graphics card upgrade and see what comes out. But you're going to have to do, you know, 15, 20 minutes of digging to cross-reference to maybe go find the card. You may be having to, you'll get the card off on, excuse me, online because, you know, Micro Center may just not have it sitting on the shelf. So you're going to have to jump through a hoop or two, but it may be worth it. So I would at least check it out.
Okay. All right, well, thank you for your time, and season's greetings again.
Season's greetings. Thanks for your call.
All right, here's my short question now. What was the programming language that was used to teach kids, and what was the animal?
Turtle.
Logo.
What?
Turtle was the animal, and Logo was the language.
That was fun. That would be like go forward, like forward 50 and right 90. And
it was a graphically based thing. You could tell it to plot. I think plot was the command, and you'd actually see the little turtle move on the screen and draw little lines.
It's like a digital etch-a-sketch as far as drawing. That was a lot of fun.
All right, one last call in the queue before we wrap this up and acronym ourselves home.
And that would be a call from Chris.
Hey, Chris, you're on the air.
Hey, guys. How are you tonight?
Good.
So my favorite acronym of all time, of course, TWAIN.
Ah, I love TWAIN, because that was the, I don't know what it stands for, but I remember having to set it up to be able to scan into, use a scanner and bring images into Photoshop.
I haven't confirmed it, but I've been told it means technology without an interesting name.
I like that.
I have heard that for TWAIN before.
That also.
Nice.
Excellent.
Well, you guys have a merry, happy new year.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening.
Take care.
Let me look that up here real quick. But I have
that actually. If you Google TWAIN acronym meeting, that's like the first six hits.
Not an official acronym, however, is widely known as thing without an interesting name. But yeah.
TWAIN. What does the TWAIN working group have to say about this?
Standard software protocol and application programming interface that regulates communications between the software application and imaging devices such as scanners and digital cameras.
Supposedly, it was chosen because, I guess, never the twain shall meet.
Right.
So.
And as opposed to its predecessor, the taint.
I was thinking about that, but I wasn't going to say it. I tiptoed around I-N-A-L.
He didn't tiptoe very well.
So, anybody know AWK?
AWK? A-W-K?
What it stands for?
It was the initials of the three developers of the language.
Oh. Yes.
I don't remember their last names.
Neither do I. But you are correct. That's what it was.
Wow, TTL, everybody. SYNW.
HTH.
Ack.
Hope that helps.
All right, well, you've been listening to Technology Bites.
HAND.
Thanks for tuning in. Bunch of geeks and nerds and stuff. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groove House.
Thanks for hanging out with us, Justin.
Thank you.
You brought something to the table.
It's done brought.
Hopefully not a virus.
ADIOS.
Adios, y'all.
During the month of December, KPFT asks people just like you listening at home, work, or in your cars to make secure online contributions at kpft.org. When we first tried the simple one-minute campaign last year, you helped KPFT to the tune of $27,000. This year, we want to beat that number, but we really need your help. We're putting 2012 to bed, and KPFT could really use your help to surpass our total from the previous year. Visit kpft.org to donate right now as the clock ticks down. Your pledge online will mean a great deal. This is your community radio station, 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
Through December, KPFT is asking you to give a year-end donation to offset shortfalls we've had in 2012 and to help start 2013 off right. The following people have donated so far. From Houston, James, David, Dorothy, Burton, Erica, Glendon, Robert, Monica, Michael, Cynthia, Deidre, Ralph, Dee, Meredith, and many more. Also, thank you to Pamela from Bel Air, Sally from Spring, Carolyn from Conroe, Jana from Deer Park, Deborah, as well as Roger from Richmond and Hillary from Seabrook. Stay tuned for more thank yous, including yours, for the rest of our year-end pledge campaign. The end of the year is almost here, and it's your last chance to make the tax-deductible contribution you'll need in January. Visit kpft.org right now to support KPFT Houston.